What's up, everyone? I'm Joe Pompliano, and this is the Joe Pomp Show. I hope everyone's having a great week so far. We have a huge episode to bring to you guys today. I assume everyone has heard what's going on with the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? Well, after owner Glenn Taylor said the team was no longer for sale when incoming owners Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry missed the payment that would have given them majority control of the franchise, I decided to dive in. Something just didn't seem right. So over the last few weeks, I've uncovered many exclusive details. These details were provided to me through conversations with people directly involved in the situation. We're talking about NBA executives, Timberwolves employees, sports bankers, lawyers, and others. These people were granted anonymity so they could speak freely. And my only goal was to investigate what has become one of the NBA's most interesting storylines. So today's episode is going to be broken down into several sections. First, we'll talk through Glenn Taylor's history in the NBA, including how the initial sale went down, and why he spurned multiple cash offers to do a deal with Rodriguez and Lowry instead. Then, we'll dig into what has happened over the past few years, including Tim Connelly's unique contract and a financial transformation within the franchise. And lastly, we'll discuss potential outcomes, mainly professional legal opinions I have vetted through multiple sports lawyers who have conducted dozens of sports team sales. This episode required a lot of time and effort, so all I ask is if you enjoy it, please share it with a friend. All right, let's get right into it. Today's podcast is sponsored by Doer. I'm super excited that Doer is now sponsoring this podcast because they sent me a pair of jeans a few months ago, and they are absolutely fantastic. Finding a good pair of jeans is never easy, especially when you want something you can wear all the time while still looking good and feeling comfortable. I don't know about you guys, but it feels like I try 3 to 4 different brands every year, and they almost always never work out. Some don't fit right, some shrink in the wash, some aren't comfortable, etc. But I was recently introduced to Doer's denim offering, and I think they cracked the code. Doer's denim uniquely mixes classic style with technical performance. It has 360-degree stretch, which keeps you cool throughout the day, and it's become my go-to option for virtually everything, from watching games at the bar to date night. So if you want to upgrade your closet today, give Doer a try. They have a bunch of different options on their website, and the best part is they're offering all of my listeners a special 20% discount code. All you have to do is go to shopdoer.com/pomp. That's shop, D-U-E-R.com/pomp. Today's episode is sponsored by Hyperice. Hyperice is not only one of my favorite companies in all of sports, but they're also one of the fastest growing companies in sports today. Hyperice is the official recovery technology partner of leagues like the NBA, MLB, PGA Tour, and even the UFC. And you've probably seen athletes like Naomi Osaka and Erling Haaland using their products. But Hyperice isn't just for pro athletes. Me, personally, I use their Hypervolt massage gun, invented heat and back wrap several times each week, and it's become an absolute game changer for my health and wellness. Not only is it helpful after hard workouts, but sometimes I just wake up and my back hurts because of how I slept. So I throw on the heated back wrap and it literally solves everything within minutes. It's absolutely incredible, the products that they built, and I want all of you to be able to experience it for yourself. So go check out Hyperice today and start recovering like a professional athlete. All of my listeners can use code JOE15 for 15% off their order. So make sure to go check out hyperice.com today and use code JOE15 for 15% off your order. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've probably noticed over the last few years that many more of your family and friends are starting to take therapy more seriously. And it's not just you. I've personally noticed this across my family and friends too. And I think the major reason for this is that they've now noticed that therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy is proven to help with other things like communication skills, improving mood, increasing self-awareness, and making your relationships stronger. So if you're thinking about starting therapy today, there's no better place than BetterHelp. BetterHelp is entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is you go on their website, you fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. They've helped out millions of people with therapy help, and they have 35,000 licensed therapists ready to help you. So visit betterhelp.com/pomp to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/pomp. Part one, Glenn Taylor's checkered past hints at a problematic future. Glenn Taylor's NBA resume is as complex as it is long. In 1994, the former Minnesota Senator purchased the Timberwolves for $88 million. Initially, fans loved Taylor, mainly because his purchase stopped the franchise from relocating to New Orleans. However, the honeymoon phase didn't last long. It's now widely accepted amongst NBA insiders and Timberwolves fans that Taylor is one of the worst owners in sports. It started when Taylor was suspended in 2000 by the NBA for his role in signing Joe Smith to a secret contract in violation of the league's salary cap rules. Then Commissioner David Stern called the situation one of the farthest-reaching frauds I've ever seen, and it cost the Timberwolves $3.5 million in three future draft picks. There have been countless other problems, too, like when former Timberwolves general manager Kevin McHale sued Taylor for allegedly sabotaging the value of a medical device company McHale invested in. And we all know about Kevin Garnett, a franchise legend, who was refused to participate in a jersey retirement ceremony or even speak with Taylor after a deal for him to join Timberwolves management upon retirement fell through, with Garnett later saying, "I don't do business with snakes." So when rumors kept popping up over the last decade that Taylor was interested in selling the team, most fans were thrilled. Taylor's 83 years old and not getting any younger. No one in his family is taking over the team. And given the franchise hasn't won a playoff series in more than 20 years, new ownership was seen as a breath of fresh air. The only problem with these discussions is that they never escalated to a sale. For example, multiple sources tell me Taylor has engaged with a handful of interested parties over the last decade, only for talks to fall apart when Taylor had to sign on the dotted line. Some of these negotiations have already been reported, like when Taylor tried to sell the Timberwolves to minority owners of the Memphis Grizzlies. However, sources tell me this has happened several other times, too. And these deals weren't reported because people started to question whether Taylor really wanted to sell the team. Ultimately, this is how Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie got involved. Rodriguez and Lurie first met with Glenn Taylor in April 2021. The negotiation process moved quickly, and an agreement to purchase the Minnesota Timberwolves and the WNBA's Minnesota Lynx for $1.5 billion was finalized in just 3 months, on July 21st, 2021. The interesting part about this deal, though, is that sources with direct knowledge of the situation tell me Taylor turned down multiple cash offers at the same $1.5 billion price. Instead, he asked Rodriguez and Lurie to spread their payments out over 3 years, meaning they would buy up equity in four tranches and wouldn't officially become majority owners of the team until 2024. Here's how the deal was structured. Option number one, A-Rod and Lurie would buy a 20% stake. Then they would come back the following year with option number two, buying another 20% stake. And option number three, which is the one that happened last month, A-Rod and Lurie would buy a 40% stake in the team, which would give them majority control. And then option number four was for them to buy the final 20% stake for complete control. Taylor and his new business partners, Rodriguez and Lurie, told everyone they were on the same page and that this unique structure was the best way to ease the transition of ownership. But behind closed doors, sources say it was the opposite. Multiple people have told me Taylor was the one who pushed for this longer process, and Rodriguez and Lurie only accepted the terms because it was the only way to finalize the deal. Still, the NBA approved the sale. Rodriguez and Lurie wired their initial nine-figure payment, and Taylor formally announced them as co-owners at a press conference. Part 2. Timberwolves see success, relationships start to fracture. The Minnesota Timberwolves are now one of the NBA's best teams. They finished this year's regular season with the league's fourth best record. They have a superstar in Anthony Edwards, and the team's top four leading scorers are all under 31 years old. This on-court success has transformed the business. Public data tells us Minnesota's local market viewership is up 115% from last year. And privately, a source told me the Timberwolves recently cracked $50 million in annual ticket revenue for the first time ever. And the team has gone from producing just six figures of gross revenue per home game a few years ago to over $2 million in revenue for select home games this year. To be fair, some of these seeds were planted well before Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie arrived. Anthony Edwards, for instance, was Minnesota's first overall pick in the 2020 NBA draft and is now widely considered by most to be a generational talent. However, sources tell me Rodriguez and Lurie were the true driving force behind the Timberwolves signing Tim Connelly as president of basketball operations. Rodriguez and Lurie have talked about this at length in recent media appearances. But I'm told Connelly's hiring was a point of contention between the team's ownership group. For example, to convince Connelly to leave the Denver Nuggets, Rodriguez and Lurie put together one of the NBA's most lucrative compensation packages. Not only did the deal include $40 million over 5 years, or $8 million annually, but sources tell me Rodriguez and Lurie offered Connelly phantom equity in the Timberwolves. Now, phantom equity is commonly used in startups, where Lurie made his money, as a way to motivate key employees by aligning interests. The person receiving phantom equity doesn't actually get equity in the business, but it allows them to profit financially if the asset does well. In this case, specifically, I'm told Connelly's potential payout was tied to the team's valuation growth under his leadership. Glenn Taylor had a problem with this for two reasons. Number one, Taylor thought paying Connelly $8 million annually was too much. Number two, Taylor didn't want to set a precedent by giving the president of basketball operations equity in the team. In the end, sources tell me the group settled on a compromise. Taylor let Rodriguez and Lurie hire Connelly at $8 million annually, given that they were scheduled to become majority owners within 24 months. Anyway, But Taylor told them they were only allowed to do this if they removed the phantom equity clause from Connolly's deal. Rodriguez and Laurier agreed, and Connolly accepted the deal. But while everything looked amicable on the surface, many people just couldn't believe Connolly would leave Denver for Minnesota. I'm told this was the start of a fractured relationship. According to sources close to the situation, there was also some discontent with the Rudy Gobert trade, which, again, Rodriguez and Laurier have mentioned in recent interviews, too. But I'm told these issues really speak to a larger problem within the organization. The business side of the building has Glenn's back, while the younger generation of players has quietly been waiting for Rodriguez and Laurier to take over the team. Still, despite a buildup of tension between business partners, the acquisition progressed. A source confirmed with me that Rodriguez and Laurier have invested over $500 million so far as part of their 36% stake in the team. Rodriguez also frequently talks about buying a home in Minnesota, and another source tells me that Rodriguez and Laurier have collectively spent more than $1 million on courtside season tickets. But this is where things get messy. With a third tranche of the acquisition set to take place last month, Taylor called off the deal. Instead of handing over majority control of the team to Rodriguez and Laurier, Taylor issued a press release saying his new partners failed to raise the necessary capital and the Timberwolves were no longer for sale. Part 3. Glenn Taylor gets cold feet, calls off the deal. Over the last few weeks, many people have debated whether Glenn Taylor has legal standing to cancel the agreement, which we'll discuss. But more important, through my conversations with sources, I've discovered that Taylor's cancellation of the deal was more about cold feet than it was about Rodriguez and Laurier not having the money. For example, it's no secret Rodriguez and Laurier were raising money from the Carlyle Group to fund a portion of the third tranche, the 40% stake that would have given them majority control of the team. But the NBA denied the private equity group as an investor. I'm told the NBA denied Carlyle because they own equity in businesses that work directly with NBA players, and they were unwilling to liquidate those investments. But that's really only half the story. Sources with direct knowledge of the financing process told me Rodriguez and Laurier had Dial Capital Partners ready to go as a backup plan. The terms weren't as good. One example of this is that A-Rod was reportedly trying to sell shares at a higher price than the 2021 valuation and pocket the difference. But Dial already owned several minority equity stakes across the NBA and was seen as a safe backup plan because the firm is already a pre-approved NBA investment partner. So they closed the deal with Dial and sent the paperwork to the NBA. The NBA still needed to interview some of the group's limited partners, like Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google. But a source tells me Rodriguez and Laurier felt they were in the clear, presumably because their lawyers advised them the agreement automatically extended an additional 90 days if the deal was under NBA review at expiration. However, multiple other sources have told me they believe Taylor was always going to pull something like this. Specifically, they pointed out two examples of mistrust. First, the Timberwolves currently have about a dozen limited partners. These are minority shareholders, most of whom bought in at a low price and have been looking for liquidity for years. However, rather than letting these limited partners sell their equity stakes early on in the process, I'm told the 36% stake that Rodriguez and Laurier purchased came entirely from Taylor's existing 70% ownership stake in the team. That means that after 2 years and $500 million investment from Rodriguez and Laurier, Glenn Taylor was the team's only shareholder to take money off the table. The team's second largest shareholder, a real estate developer named Meyer Orbach, actually sued Glenn Taylor for doing this. And while making someone wait years to receive their money is obviously not ideal, it goes even deeper. Sources tell me Taylor exclusively sold his shares because there is only a 4% price escalator in the original agreement, meaning not only did these LPs not get their money out at a $1.5 billion valuation in 2021, but they are now earning just 4% annually on that locked up money. That leads me to the second example, which is potentially more concerning. Sources close to the situation tell me that since Taylor sold his personal equity of Rodriguez and Laurier rather than LP equity, his ownership stake in the team actually fell below Rodriguez and Laurier. About 34% for Taylor to 36% for the new owner, Rodriguez and Laurier. But rather than letting this happen, which was going to happen anyway during the next acquisition payment, sources said Taylor quietly purchased a small equity stake from an existing limited partner. I'm told that the limited partner was Bill Sexton, and his 2.96% equity stake, combined with Taylor's existing 34% stake, put the current Timberwolves owner back in front of Rodriguez and Laurier, now 37% to 36%. The obvious question is, why would Glenn Taylor do that? Except there really isn't a good answer, unless we assume he never intended to follow through on the deal in the first place. Part 4, mediation, arbitration, then what? It inevitably feels this arrangement is headed toward a lengthy legal process. For starters, Glenn Taylor has dug his feet into the ground, repeatedly saying over the last few weeks that he believes he has legal standing to terminate the agreement. And Rodriguez and Laurier aren't going down without a fight, as they stand to make billions, with the team's valuation doubling from $1.5 billion in 2021 to about $3 billion today. Sources close to the situation tell me the agreement outlines a clear process. First, the argument will be heard privately by a mediator. Then, if that doesn't work, it will head to a three-person arbitration committee, with one person picked by Taylor, another picked by Rodriguez and Lori, and the third mutually agreed upon by the other two. If that doesn't solve the issue, then the argument will go to court. Sources tell me Taylor feels like he has an advantage in this situation, as it would be on his home turf in Minnesota, a state where he previously served as senator and has lived his entire life. Interestingly enough, the actual equity purchase agreement between Taylor and Rodriguez and Lori was made public through the lawsuit I previously mentioned between Taylor and Meyer Orbach, an existing Timberwolves limited partner. I wasn't able to get an opinion from any of the lawyers who worked on this specific agreement, but I did run it by several sources who have worked on dozens of sports transactions, and the overwhelming opinion is that, unless there is something we don't know, Rodriguez and Lori should be entitled to the 90-day extension. However, there are several other things we need to consider. The 4% price escalator, for instance, means that the longer this draws out, the worse it gets for Minnesota's limited partners. That's because if Rodriguez and Lori end up assuming control of the team 12 to 24 months from now, these LPs would have had their money locked up even longer than they previously anticipated and no additional interest to show for it. Furthermore, sources confirm with me that Tim Connelly's deal includes an opt-out clause after the season, a deal that was first reported by The Athletic's Shams Charania. So, knowing Taylor could continue to own the team long-term and didn't want him in the first place, it's logical to speculate as to whether Connelly might exercise that option and leave the Timberwolves to join another NBA franchise, many of which would love to have him. I also wouldn't expect Rodriguez or Lori to stay on as limited partners if this doesn't go their way. The easiest way to explain this dilemma is that limited partners typically receive a 30 to 40% discount on their investment because limited partner stakes don't have any control or liquidity. So an example might be someone paying $60 million for a 10% stake in a team that's valued at $1 billion, rather than paying $100 million for the same 10% stake. This typically isn't a huge deal, as the investor is simply being compensated with a discount for their lack of control and liquidity. But in Rodriguez and Lori's case, it makes a substantial difference, as their 36% equity stake was acquired at a premium, rather than a discount, because the expectation was that it would lead to majority control. So don't be surprised if things get ugly. Someone has already leaked a document to NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski, claiming Taylor got nervous that Rodriguez and Lori were going to blow up a championship-contending team because they submitted a financial plan to the NBA that placed the franchise under the luxury tax threshold. Wojnarowski said, after decades of futility, the Timberwolves are the West's top seed, and Lori and Rodriguez's cost-cutting projections were among the reasons that led Taylor to void a contract that would have finalized the sale of the Timberwolves. My sources were able to confirm that this is true. Rodriguez and Lori did submit a projection that put them under the salary cap next season. However, I'm also told that this is relatively normal, with many owners choosing to submit lower projections only to revise them at a later date once they see how competitive their team is in the playoffs. I also think it's worth noting that Taylor has changed his story multiple times. At first, it was that Rodriguez and Lori didn't have the money. Then, after several outlets, including The Athletic, reviewed financial documentation proving they submitted a fully capitalized offer to the NBA, the league's top insider now insinuates that they are cheap. So, are they too flashy for spending $40 million on an executive and $10 million on an in-arena owner suite? Or are they too cheap for submitting a financial projection that would have put the Timberwolves under the luxury tax threshold next season? Maybe it's both, but you could see why the stories start to contradict each other. In fact, Taylor basically admitted this dispute wasn't about money, telling The Athletic earlier last month, "We built this team. We got the players now. It appears to me that we should have a very positive run for a number of years, and I want to be part of that." That's why sources close to the situation feel confident this will eventually end with Rodriguez and Lori taking over the team. The legal process still needs to play out, which is somewhat of an unknown, and it may not happen tomorrow, a month from now, or even a year from now. But everyone I talk to seems to be operating under the impression that Taylor will string this battle out for as long as he possibly can. Again, Taylor's 83 years old. He is currently overseeing the best Timberwolves team he's had in decades, and he doesn't intend to give that up without a fight, whether fair or foul. However, from everything I've gathered, it may not be his choice. Legal experts say this contract is ironclad. His limited partners are getting more upset every day this drags on. It appears Taylor has undermined the agreement from day one, but even his best efforts won't let him void a signed contract just because the team got better. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Please do me a favor. If you did, leave me a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this episode. Other than that, have a great day, and we'll talk later this week.